This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Okay, good evening. This is Craig Lubo, and we have the calendar first up for Radioactive Magazine tonight, and then Spencer Graves will have his interview that he will play. First up on the calendar is this Friday evening, October 21st. The Olathe Public Library has a series of free concerts that they offer through the year, and this Friday they have Spook Handy. Spook was a singer that was here in February at the Folk Alliance Conference, and he does a tribute remembering Pete Seeger. He also has some songs that he writes himself relating to voting and elections and stuff. He'll be at the library at 6:30 p.m. this Friday. That's 201 East Park Street in Olathe, a couple blocks from the courthouse right off of Santa Fe. The second item is the Kansas Coalition Against Death Penalty. This Saturday, October 22nd, has their annual conference from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., and that is going to be held at St. Aidan's Episcopal Church, 14301 South Black Bob Road in Olathe, Kansas. The four speakers will include Daryl Burton, who was wrongfully convicted of murder, Celeste Dixon, who lost her mother to homicide, Al Terwelp, who saw his taxes go up to pay for the death penalty case, and Roger Werholtz, who is retired secretary of the Kansas Department of Corrections. It's open to the public and free, and will be this Saturday, 1 to 4.
Good evening, and welcome to this episode of Radioactive Magazine on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. We will discuss tonight the positions of the candidates for the United States Senate in Kansas and Missouri on how to respond to ISIS and the programs of the American Friends Service Committee, Kansas City Chapter, and of PeaceWorks, because we have a couple of guests from those two organizations. This segment was recorded on October 14, 2016. The opinions expressed are those of the authors, not of the Midcoast Radio Project, nor of 90.1 FM, KTFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Spencer Graves. With me are Mary Hlatke and Dave Pack, and so why don't you introduce yourselves?
My name is Mary Hlatke, and I work with the American Friends Service Committee here in Kansas City, Missouri, and also with PeaceWorks, and they're both organizations that work for peace and justice in our world today.
And Dave Pack, I am on the program committee of the American Friends Service Committee office here in Kansas City, and also on the board of directors of PeaceWorks Kansas City, which is an affiliate of the national organization Peace Action, whose board I'm also on. So I'm very involved with issues of military spending, nuclear weapons, and the whole range of peace and justice concerns.
Wonderful. Thank you. Let me give a little bit background for what I had planned for tonight. On September 29th, I sent emails to all the United States Senate candidates in Kansas and Missouri this year asking, what approach do you recommend in combating the Islamic State and other terrorist groups? In particular, what are your thoughts on the 2008 RAND study on how terrorist groups end? The research led by Chenoweth and Stephan that identified all the major violent and nonviolent governmental change efforts of the 20th century and other relevant research. I mention those research studies because I believe they have profound implications for U.S. foreign policy, foreign and military policy, and for conflict and management more generally. The email to the candidates linked to Wikiversity articles on effective defense and effective defense in ISIL, which discussed these and other studies. The questionnaire on this went to three U.S. Senate candidates in Kansas and four in Missouri. The three Kansas candidates include Republican incumbent Jerry Moran, Democrat Patrick Wiesner, and Libertarian Robert Girard. In Missouri, we contacted Republican incumbent Roy Blunt, Democrat Jason Kander, Libertarian Jonathan Dean, and Constitution Party candidate Fred Ryman. We invited we initiated follow-up activities with all the candidates in early October, unfortunately, we received basically no replies. So, in any case, let me start by briefly summarizing the RAND study and the research of Chenoweth and Stephan, and then Dave will talk to us about, Dave and Mary maybe will talk about the records of the candidates as from what they could find on the web. Regarding the RAND study, this identified 268 terrorist groups worldwide that ended between 1968 and 2006. 20 of these 268, 7%, were taken out by military force. 7%. That suggests that the approach that the West is taking to ISIL is the least effective response to terrorism. 43% of these terrorist groups converted to nonviolent political actors like the Irish Republican Army in Northern Ireland. 40% were eliminated by law enforcement. Only 10% won. This provides a vision of a more effective approach to the Islamic State. First, try to open negotiation channels with ISIL, with the Islamic State, to explore the circumstances under which an agreement might be reached that could convert them into acceptable nonviolent political actors, like the 43% of the terrorist groups identified in the RAND study. Second, focus more on enforcing existing laws regarding international arms transfers and financing terrorism, similar to the efforts that eliminated 40% of the terrorist groups operating between 68 and 2006. If the U.S. and its Western allies, including Turkey, emphasize rule of law over force, they could likely get the collaboration of many other countries in efforts to enforce existing law. Such efforts could substantially reduce the flow of money and supplies to the Islamic State. This, in turn, would reduce their military capabilities and encourage them to consider more conciliatory negotiating positions. Number three, make a larger effort to understand and reduce the legitimate grievances that might be driving people off the sidelines to support the Islamic State. For example, between 100,000 and 1 million Iraqis died between 2003 and 2011 as a result of the U.S.-led invasion there. It's hard to kill that many people without making enemies. So, why don't I pass the ball to you, Dave, and you can tell us about what you found in your research discussing the positions of the candidates.
Okay, I'm going to refer to the Kansas candidates for Senate. I live in Kansas, in Lenexa. There are three candidates, and I'm going to talk about them in alphabetical order by party, Democratic, Libertarian, and Republican. The Democratic candidate is Patrick Wiesner. And he has a website at wiesnerforsenate.com. It's a pretty extensive website. There's a section on it called The Issues, which has 14 subsections. Unfortunately, none of those subsections is about military spending and defense. This tends to be kind of the reality of today. The Democratic and Republican parties aren't really that much different on these issues, and so they at times tend to talk about them very little because they don't differentiate between the two candidates. Patrick Wiesner was a military reservist for 21 years. He's an attorney, and in the latter part of those years he was using his attorney training in a military setting. So we don't really have any, clear indication of where he is in terms of, how he would deal with terrorists in the Middle East. It's difficult, to know where he would go. One of the things that he does support is the idea of paying off the U.S. debt, a rather unusual idea for a Democrat. But, you know, you might see that idea as sort of automatically limiting what you can do in military spending, because military spending is, you know, a major cause for U.S. debt. So you might see his support for getting rid of the U.S. debt as being a positive in the sense of, well, he's going to be forced to, you know, rein in military spending. The Libertarian candidate is Robert Girard, and he has a website at www.robertgirard.org. However, in visiting it at the time I did, it listed it as under construction and referred the person who was seeking the website to go to the Libertarian Party platform. I found a reference in the Hutchinson News from October 2nd that quoted him as saying, "I will support national defense and oppose nation building." This is very consistent with what you find in the Libertarian Party's platform. They say that we support the maintenance of a sufficient military to defend the United States against aggression. The United States should both avoid entangling alliances and abandon its attempts to act as policeman for the world. In line with their general desire to limit government, also want to limit government in terms of our overseas involvement in the world. So you can see that as perhaps a positive, you know, those of us who are interested in peace in the world and non-militaristic solutions to problems, there is some support for that, you know, through the libertarian philosophy. The Republican incumbent is Jerry Moran, website at www.moran.senate.gov. Moran is from Western Kansas. He used to be the congressman from Western Kansas. He is the incumbent, and because of that, he has a voting record on peace and justice issues. There is a website where you can access voting records for incumbents in the U.S. Congress and Senate. That website is thescore, the words the and score with no space between, .peaceactionwest, those three words again with no space in between them, .org. You can go there, simply indicate you're trying to find a voting record by the last name, and type in the last name, and hit the search, and it'll come back with a voting record for that particular senator or congressman. The issues that you find in that voting record are issues that the National Peace Action Group has found to be important to them in terms of their work on peace and justice. Senator Moran, over the past 6 years, on 33 issues, voted only 5 correctly as far as peace action was concerned, about a 15% positive rating, a very poor rating. In the past year, there were 4 votes recorded, and he voted wrong on all 4 of them. Generally speaking, Senator Moran is a very unapologetic, militaristic senator who always supports every dollar of defense spending that's proposed, who probably would never be comfortable with the idea of approaching ISIS with a non-military approach. He is an American exceptionalist type of guy. You know, don't waste your breath telling him there's anything wrong with the U.S. or what it does with its military power. The race in Kansas is non-existent, to be quite honest. Moran is the incumbent, and there's basically no chance that he will lose this election. So that's kind of the status of the candidates in the state of Kansas.
Well, thank you, Dave. So, Mary, you're gonna give us a...
I can just give a very brief summary. Dave did some excellent work. I basically looked at Senator Blunt's record, and it's very much militaristic, and he's voted for all the wars and supports all the military actions. And Jason Kander, who's running against him as a Democrat, served in Afghanistan, and he says our top priority is ISIS and putting a plan together to eliminate ISIS. So that's very typical of something Roy Blunt would say as well. And then there was one other person, and his name is Fred Ryman, Constitution Party, and he says that, you know, he always has a plan for everything, but regarding terrorism, this is one thing where he thinks his solution must remain hidden because it would be utter foolishness to announce a strategy and expect the enemy to simply allow it to proceed as planned. So that was basically the basic research that I did, very little bit, but basically I've been working on the issues of war for 10, 12 years and working with politicians of any type, a Republican or Democrat, or whoever, is difficult. And I wrote just a two-minute statement kind of summarizing what I have found. And basically I found that wars, U.S. militarism, and the global war on terror are not topics of deep discussion by any politician. And they're not being held accountable either. Our military interventions have not made us safer, and terrorism is on the rise. We as Americans must realize that when we bomb people, as we have in seven countries during Obama's presidency, we shouldn't be surprised by blowback. The president and our military leadership often state there is no military solution in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria, yet that seems to be our only response. And as the research you talked about, Spencer, we don't explore more effective options. So some things that we could do that might make things better, because doing the same thing over and over again is not working, is negotiating and begin an arms embargo. We can also deprive ISIS of funding and weaponry. And it would be better to build instead of destroying countries, creating friends, not enemies. And that could be achieved with a very modest reduction in U.S. military spending. Peace is much less expensive than war. Also, we should stop spending $1 trillion a year on militarism, and that includes the spending on the Pentagon, nuclear weapons, CIA, NSA, State Department, Homeland Security, and interest on the war debt. It's $1 trillion a year, a mind-blowing number, and that needs to stop. So simply put, you know, our military-first approach has failed. It's been very obvious over the past 15 years that global war on terror has not worked. It is only getting worse. We need to do something different. So in order to transform our country, we the people must demand an end to futile, endless wars, transferring those war dollars to fund crucial programs for our people, our communities, and our planet.
That's interesting. Thank you, Mary. I think I summarized the RAND study, but I didn't summarize the Chenoweth and Stephan work. Erica Chenoweth and Maria Stephan organized a major international effort with scholars all over the world to identify all the major violent, nonviolent governmental change efforts of the 20th century. They identified over 200 violent revolutions and over 100 nonviolent campaigns. 53% of the nonviolent campaigns were successful. 26% of the violent campaigns were. So you are twice as likely to be successful with nonviolence as with violence. Moreover, if you look at the impact on democracy scores 5 and 10 years after the end of the conflict, it turns out that violence builds tyranny and nonviolence builds democracy. This is summarized on effectivedefense.org, EFFECTIVEDEFENSE, all one word, .org, which links to Wikiversity articles on effective defense and effective defense and ISIL that give more detail that supports the commentary that Mary was just saying, and provides added impetus to saying why we need to push for nonviolence and rule of law. Mary and Dave, why don't you talk a little bit more about the PeaceWorks program and the program of the American Friends Service Committee?
Well, one thing that the American Friends Service Committee has been working on for several years, and PeaceWorks Kansas City certainly shares in this desire, is what's called the Move the Money program. Encourage reducing military spending, shifting those funds over into social needs. The military spending of the United States, when you look at that spending in all of its sources, which is not just in the Department of Defense, comes basically to about $1 trillion per year. $1 trillion per year. It's more than $3,000 per American citizen. When you talk about taxation and wanting to reduce taxation, here's a major thing. A major requirement for taxation of the American people is this excessive military spending.
And if you'll permit me for interrupting, the research of Chenoweth and Stefan especially, and that of the RAND study and other studies cited on the Wikiversity articles on effective defense, so forth, suggests that we could have more effective national defense for vastly less money.
Mm-hmm. And some interesting things I learned. If U.S. military spending was returned to 2001 levels before 9/11, the savings would be $213 billion per year. And it would, with that money, you could end hunger and starvation worldwide for that year for $30 billion. You could provide clean drinking water worldwide for $11 billion. You could provide free college in the United States for $70 billion. You could double U.S. foreign aid for $23 billion. Build and maintain high-speed rail system for $30 billion. Invest in solar and renewable energy for $20 billion. And you could fund peace initiatives as never before for $10 billion. And you'd still have money left over. And that's just bringing it back to 2001 levels.
With a 20% cut, basically, in the military.
You mean people? Staffing?
Well, in the military budget. Your 200 and some
odd... It's 20%.
Odd, okay. Is basically 20% of a trillion, right? 200 and some odd billion is just over 20% of a trillion.
Right. So, in other words, we're making choices. Our priorities. What are our priorities? How do you want to spend our money? And what good we could be doing with our money and building friendships all over the world, and we would not have these tensions. We don't have to accept this way of doing things. War is not the answer. It's not working. We need to do something different, and we could do so much more good and positive with our money, and we would not have this type of conflict.
Another, the PeaceWorks Kansas City organization over the past few years has worked quite extensively on the issue of nuclear weapons. There is a new nuclear weapons plant here in Kansas City on Botts Road, which produces 85% of the non-nuclear components of our nuclear weapons. There are plans at the national level to spend something like $1 trillion over the next 10 years to quote-unquote modernize our nuclear weapons, in spite of the fact that President Obama has committed the country to getting rid of them. This is a major part of the military spending that where we could easily cut a lot with no real harm to the U.S. security.
And another thing, too, that there's been a number of articles about the $8.5 trillion, that's trillion with a T, that the Pentagon cannot explain that the taxpayer gave them between 1996 and 2013. So that's the money they spend on war and preparations for war, and they cannot identify it. They have been mandated by Congress in 1996 to be audited, and they can't do that. They have never been audited, as every other department has been.
And the Congress has refused so far to levy any consequences for flunking an audit.
So people are saying we need to watch our money and take money away from the poor who may need it, but we're not willing to call account to the Pentagon for $8.5 trillion that they can't account for between the years of 1996 and 2013. Why do we allow that to happen? Where is the outrage? That should be an outrage, and we should be all complaining about that. Also, when you spend those same dollars, people say, well, the war economy helps us. And they said, though, if you spend the same dollars on peaceful industries, on education, on infrastructure, and even on tax cuts for working people, that would produce more jobs and, in most cases, better-paying jobs with enough savings to help everyone make the transition from war work to peace work. So there are all kinds of ways that we can change what we're doing. We just have to have the will to do it and to demand it.
Yeah. The there's research indicating that investment in education produces 2.5 times the economic growth that military Keynesianism does. Something on that order. I think there are citations on that on the research and some place. I'm not certain if I've got it in the websites that are mentioned on the Wikiversity websites that I mentioned. But there's some senior statesmen, like even Henry Kissinger, has advocated negotiations to get back on a nuclear disarmament track. Retired Colonel Andrew Bacevich is on record as saying that we'd be better off unilaterally disarming. Why? Because there have been a substantial number of near misses. Then, and all we need is one to end life on this planet as we've known it. And there's a book from 1993 entitled "The Limits of Safety" by Scott Sagan that listed a number of near misses during there were at least 2 points during the Cuban Missile Crisis that almost launched a nuclear exchange. In one case, somebody misread a radar screen that was reported up the chain of command, claiming that Cuba had launched their nuclear missiles toward the United States. Turns out that it was just a misreading of the radar. Fortunately, somebody double-checked that, triple-checked it, and didn't actually launch the retaliatory missiles. Similarly, there were Russians in a sub who were being depth charged, and the three commanding officers in that sub, under their rules of engagement, had to agree on whether the situation required them to launch their nuclear weapons. They'd lost contact with Moscow, and the two of them believed that the war had already started, and it would be unacceptable for them to just surface without launching their nuclear weapons. But the third one said no, so they surfaced, and fortunately that decision again saved the world from a nuclear catastrophe. It's things like that push retired Colonel Andrew Bacevich to advocate unilateral nuclear disarmament. Is there anything else you two want to say?
I would just add that, kind of going back to the original discussion about ISIS in the Middle East and how you approach dealing with that problem, the militaristic approach to it just isn't working. Look at all we have expended in Iraq, in Afghanistan. Would you say that our security is now better than it was? I would say not. We have killed so many Iraqis and so many Afghani people and so many innocent people.
In Yemen, you know,
we create more enemies through this militaristic approach.
And there simply has got to be a better way that will produce us with more real security.
Let me ask one more question, okay? If our listeners want to get involved to support the American Friends Service Committee or PeaceWorks, how would they do that?
PeaceWorks has a website, www.peaceworkskc.org. And you could get in touch with us through the website. Join us through the website, and that probably would be the most effective way.
Okay.
And American Friends Service Committee also has a website. They have a national website and the KC website. I'm not sure of the exact email address, maybe afskc.org, but if you type in Google, American Friends Service Committee, Kansas City, you'll come to our site and you could contact us that way.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Again, our guests have been... Dave Pack and Mary Hiladke with the American Friends Service Committee Kansas City office and PeaceWorks Kansas City. We're out of time. This concludes this episode of Radioactive Magazine. If you'd like to share this with others, you can find it on with a web search for Radioactive Magazine, kkfi.org. The opinions you overheard are those of the authors and not of the Midcoast Radio Project, nor of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, who thank you.